having issues buying from China and want some tips and advice? Then today's podcast is just for you.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Welcome, everybody, to episode number 67 of the Global from Asia podcast. Been chatting to a few people about their New Year's resolution for 2015, and everybody's really excited. I think the trick is keeping momentum through January and the rest of the year, so let's all just stay motivated. Also, some fun announcement. I was featured in a New Jersey Business Magazine article for my love of the fast-paced work and life in China, and it was a full article and a lot of fun for me to actually look back and read. I'll put that up on a show notes to check out. Okay, now for today's show. It's going to be a great one. We have a popular blogger, Renaud Angerant from qualityinspection.org, and he shares some of his best presentations he's done at the Global Sources Trade Show, and he always gets amazing feedback, so we think it's going to be a good one for you guys. He's seen it all with Chinese factories, and he's going to discuss the top five challenges buyers face when dealing with these factories and his ideas on how to prevent them or do your best when faced with them. If you want the slides, you can also download them on the show notes at globalfromasia.com/episode67. Maybe you can even read them while you listen along. So let's get started. Okay, thank you everybody for tuning into another Global from Asia podcast. We have with us a friend of mine for many years and a quality control expert and blogger, Renaud Angerant from qualityinspection.org. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Great. Do you mind introducing yourself quickly to everyone?
Sure. So I'm a French guy here living in China. Came here originally in 2005, worked in Hong Kong in a trading company for a while, then 2006 set up my own little company, and we provide quality assurance services to importers, and now provide also consulting services to manufacturers in China.
Yeah, and you've definitely built up quite a good blog, so I definitely recommend people looking to do business in China and quality to check out your site, which we'll link in the notes too, and we'll talk about through the show. So we have a pretty interesting topic. You've done these presentations at Global Sources and other places, so it's gotten really good feedback, and we thought it'd be great for the show, is the five biggest challenges for importing from China and how to manage them. So there is some visual parts that normally Renaud shows, but we'll put them in the notes for people that want to download it. We'll have a link there, so don't feel afraid. But I think a lot of it can be done on audio and podcast. So let's start. So I will talk about the topic, and then Renaud will talk, and I'll try to give some of my maybe insights too. So we're just testing this format out. So the first one is the rising prices of China, which anybody in been here has noticed, and Renaud can share.
That's for sure. So I mentioned this first as the first of the five biggest challenges, because it just impacts everybody who buys here in China. And I haven't met an importer who said, well, that's fine, I don't worry about this. So the thing is, the impression that buyers get here in China is that prices are constantly rising. It's like a law of nature. And there are a few reasons for this. Of course, the RMB rate against the US dollar has been going up. It hasn't been consistent, actually, for the past 6 to 9 months. It hasn't really gone up. But if you look over the past 10 years, it's a pretty clear trend. Labor costs, now that's a much more consistent trend. Labor costs go up. A lot of cities have risen the minimum salary, but this is actually not really a factor. The factor is market and labor supply and demand on the labor market. So you have a limited pool of migrant workers and workers in the most industrialized areas, and there comes a time where most of them are busy working, and the manufacturers are competing for them, and prices go up. And it's a very, very strong trend. Salaries go up 15, 20, 25% a year. It's just amazing. Depends on the industries and the areas, of course. And then raw materials. Well, now that the prices of oil has dropped a lot, again, it's really not a consistent trend, but Chinese manufacturers act like the raw materials just keep going up and up and up and up and never go down.
Yeah.
You know, and when you tell them, no, look, and they say, well, that's not the price I paid. So basically they present it as a law of nature. So how, you know, what can, the question is, what can buyers do about that? First, of course, you should always ask quotations to several suppliers as much as you can. You should be familiar with what components or materials go into your product. And you should have an idea about the trends on the international market. All of this is on the internet. If you've been working with a certain supplier for a few years, well, you might have a few arguments, actually. Maybe your volumes have increased and no new product development, meaning that they really amortized the cost of the development of the first few orders, and now it's just really easy work for them. You know, maybe they should consider giving you a break, you know, and avoid raising pricing too much too fast. And one of their favorite is, oh, you know, because they're not transparent at all, they will not tell you a lot of things. So they will tell you, whoa, prices like go up because labor costs gone up, like the salaries have gone up 20%. Okay, so the price of the product has gone up like 15%. Oh, really? You know, so it means 75% of your cost is salary? I don't think I've ever visited a factory where that's the case.
True.
Okay, a lot of the time the materials represent 50, 60, 70, 80% of their costs. There's some overhead, maybe, I don't know, 10%. Maybe labor costs are 10 to 20%. Even in garments, it's not more than 20% when you think about it. It's, you know, it's considered a labor-intensive industry, but it's no more than 20% on average. So do a little math and you realize that they're just using it as an excuse and it doesn't make any sense. So you should challenge them. You know, that's really the challenge them with some numbers and ask them to provide some other numbers in front of you, right? It will help. And again, I go back to the international prices. I have a very simple example of a client of mine who's telling me, you know, and he buy, I cannot tell you what he was buying, but the main material was aluminum in his product. And he says, well, the costs keep going up. They say the cost of aluminum keep going up. What should I say? I just typed in Google and get the price on the international market of aluminum. It actually gone down. So I told him, just show them this. You know, it's you should challenge them. And if they have some of the data, they should share it with you. As long as they don't share their own data with you, that's the only data you should consider, right? Something else that's really important about pricing is don't just keep banging on the exporter, you know, the producer. It's very easy to try to compress their margin, right? But what you get in the end is quality issues and shipment delays, and I will get to that later. Try to have a much wider approach that considers the total cost of your product. You know, your product, obviously a major component of the price is the materials and components used in the product, right? So can you use less of that material? Can you use cheaper materials? That has a very strong impact on the final cost. Can you optimize the logistics? That has nothing to do with your supplier, but maybe you can structure your business in a different way and actually reduce your cost without trying to squeeze the margin out of your supplier. And one more concept I want to mention is the kind of factory that you work with. So if you buy small volumes, maybe you're just starting out or you have a small market, don't try to find very large manufacturers. They will be very inflexible. They will have much higher prices. They will just not care about you. Okay, so when another big customer places an order, your orders will be delayed. They won't even know. They won't even plan for it. They won't care. After a while, they might just forget about it, right? So you need to go for the right-sized supplier. And, of course, the problem with small factories is that they are totally unstructured and they have no quality control in place, nothing. I'm talking about, you know, 20 people, 50 people to 100 people workshops. Well, you can work through a trading company. You can work with them because trading company will have the English speaking skills, will do hopefully the follow-up and the quality control. Okay, so don't give up on that. And then if you place orders around, I don't know, maybe 50,000 US, you can be interesting to, you know, 500 people factories that can work directly with foreign customers that have more or less of a structure in place. You can trust more or less, you know, and for that kind of volume, this might be the best option for you. And it has an implication not only on prices, the prices you can get. And in general, in China, the smaller the factory is, the lower the price. Okay. It also has an impact on quality and shipment delays. And I'll talk about this later.
Yeah, this is amazing. This should be point one is like a show in itself, I'm thinking here. But we've been really...
Yeah. And there are photos that will be in the document that Mike will include in the show notes about a few factories and there's more information.
Great. Yeah, I mean, prices is like, I think for the whole time I've been in China, I came in 2007, and it's just every year is like going, everything goes up. It's just not just manufacturing, just cost of living, apartments, leases, or just people, everything is just going up, and it's just... been just rough, right? Like just living here and the food costs,
everything.
So salaries. I've blogged about that back years ago when the Foxconn suicides, I remember, and the iPhone pressure, and then Foxconn doubled the salary in Shenzhen, and it was just really squeezing everybody because then if Foxconn increases salaries,
it has an impact on the local market price.
Everything goes up, so it's just. Yeah, this is making me think we could have a whole topic in itself. But yeah, I mean, that's a big one. But it's tricky, like changing suppliers. Like I'm not doing so buying from China right now in my business. But it's really hard, I think, because you have that relationship, and then you don't want to risk the Guanxi.
Exactly.
You know, you don't want to risk break their trust, and you also don't want to go behind their back.
Business is business. What you don't want is getting a relationship with a Chinese supplier where there are very high switching costs, meaning that you just give them some kind of rough design, they do all the developments, they don't give you any of the blueprints, any files in native formats, nothing. So they own basically the design, okay, and then they manufacture it, and then for you to take it to another factory, you need to start the whole cycle again. And it might take you 6 months, 9 months. You might just, you know, the new factory might drop. So you can't just burn the bridges with the current supplier, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But now my point on this is you should come to China with a business head and really make sure the supplier understands that you are not married to them. If they do a good job, they will have your business. If they get really much more expensive than the market, or they don't do a good job, they cannot count on you forever.
Got it.
A lot of small buyers mess up with this. They don't do this right. So really come with your business head and be your friend, be their brother, whatever they like. But
okay.
Get my point.
Got it. And then also, like own the product, right? And know the product. The more you rely on them, the harder to switch. So try your best to own the product.
Exactly. So let's get to
let's go to
part two about quality. So I put this in second order after prices. I guess everybody heard of the quality risks when buying in China. It's not overstated, I would say. Now, how to avoid quality problems, how to reduce your risks of receiving a batch of non-conforming products, defective products. Well, the most important thing is find the right manufacturers, work with the right people. Nothing else comes, you know, close to that in terms of impact on your quality risks. So how do you do? Well, there's a lot of information out there on the internet, but what you need to think from the beginning is what kind of manufacturers should I work with? So I come back to the size of the manufacturer. It's very important. Also, do they already work with other importers in your country? Do they have a history of compliance with the right standards? You know, if you import, let's say, electrical products into the US, there are safety standards. Do they at least know about these standards? Like, are they aware of these standards? If no, you might go into some trouble. So try to work with experienced people. Three, don't believe everything they say. Oh yeah, sure, we do this, we do that, we sell that many of these to that big company. Oh, you know, we work with General Electric and we work with with Siemens and sure, yeah, Mayventi, exactly. don't believe it, you know, go to their factory, look at, you know, the packaging on the packaging lines, you will see who they sell to. Just don't believe anything until you have seen it. So go to their factory, learn about their business, what processes they do in-house, what they subcontract. Do they really have quality checks in place? Do they have quality indicators posted on the walls and these kind of things? You will see if they have a culture of quality or not.
I think we got to get you back on the show. I mean, I think each one of these points is a show in itself. It's amazing. And I'm looking at your show notes, your slides, and it's a...
So
it's
we
amazing.
Have, we have an example here product specification sheet and of a defect list. So the point here is that you really need to define your standard, define your expectations. So have a look at the show notes in the document. You will see this on slides, 19 and 20. So I'm not going to go through this. I'm going to go straight to shipment delays,
yep.
Which is part three.
Point three, yep.
Challenge number three. So you can expect the Chinese supplier to be late, okay? If it's the first time they make your product, if it's a custom-made product, meaning not something off-the-shelf that they were already making before, you can expect maybe, I don't know, 5-6 weeks late, okay? Because before they produce and before you issue the order, you will ask them, what's the expected shipment date? And they will say, well, you know, it's 15 March. Okay. But then a lot of things are going to happen between now and that date. And on that date, chances are, final assembly will not have started. So you need to plan it. You need to add buffers in your planning.
So like what do you think is a normal buffer? A month or a couple of weeks? Or
first order of a new product, I would say more than a month, except if they're really, really, really well organized and you can see it's really not challenging to them. And then repeat orders, depends on the history on the first one, but I would say on average 2 weeks, 2.5, 3 weeks, something like this, is a good buffer.
The tough part is, you know, to know if they're really saying what they're... Because a lot of times they've told me they're in production, but I don't really know if they're in production. Because they just... So you can push them. They might stretch the truth that it's actually happening, but you, unless you're there or have somebody that's there... Because I build my relationships. Usually the English-speaking sales girl, a lot of times is, I can kind of convince her to be on my side, or at least you don't know, she's kind of playing both sides, because the sales girl is, she's trying to keep you as a customer, but she has the factory boss that really is the one that makes the decisions. So she's trying, but
exactly,
you don't really know. Yeah,
even less if it's a trading company in the middle, which you might not be aware of actually, but then she will really have to make both sides happy, and she might not be able to control what happens in the factory. Actually, she might not even know about it. One thing that you can do if your the order amount, the, you know, the amount of money that you purchased makes it a good thing to do, you know, justifies it, is send an inspector. We do a lot of this, you know, inspections during production. We go there, so report both on quality and on production status, so you know what happens and you can give some kind of warning to the supplier.
So I know it, I mean, I hope people use your service and or any service. Maybe you can give a general range of what's the cost of an inspection.
Generally, in most areas, for one day of work of an inspector, it's about $300. That's the all-included price. So very straightforward.
With travel?
Including travel, including, you know, reporting time, all these kind of things.
Okay, great, great. And then, so let's just go through the process. So say the factory says they're in production. Could you then say, I'll send an inspector, and then that might make sure that they're truthful, or send an inspector after the production or during, or maybe
it depends. If this is the first time a new product is going in production, it's highly advisable to send an inspector during production. So they say they're going into production, then as the client, you tell us about it and we get in touch with the supplier and try to see when is a good time to come. So we'll communicate directly with them about this. It puts some pressure on them, of course. And Second thing, very, very important, never skip this, is the final inspection. Final inspection, that means when all the products are packed and finished and can be counted and picked at random. This is the only time we can do that. This is the only time when we can count when we can actually check the packing and the labeling. Okay, so very, very important, never skip the final inspection, even for repeat orders.
Got it. Cool.
So I think just in for the sake of time, so there's a follow-up template in the files, in the PDF files, and a lot of other information that you found there. You will find there. Number four, I think. Yep. Challenge number four is
IP.
IP rights. Yeah, violation of IP rights. So this situation is getting better, but a lot of manufacturers here still don't care about this, okay? Your IP rights are my IP rights if your files end up on my computer, right? That's really their mentality. So be careful about this when you share. If you have a cool new product, don't share it with everybody, okay? First, try to find some manufacturers with the right profile, then communicate with them, qualify them, you know, screen them, shortlist them. When you have one or two that you feel confident about, sign the right contract. If it's really, really, really a cool product, work with a lawyer who's specialized in China business to have the right type of NDA. Don't use an NDA, you know, the boilerplate NDA of your company in the US that has zero value here. And and then disclose the information little by little. If you need to ask quotations to a few of them, Photoshop the piece a little bit, ask them for a quotation for a very close product, but not your exact design. Just make sure that it necessitates the same processes, okay? Now, there are some legal and some non-legal strategies, right? If you have a brand, you need to register a trademark in China, very important. A lawyer can explain to you why and how to do it. Just to make sure there's no squatters, you know, it's like domains.
Yeah,
basically, they
similar.
Can just buy it and you can do anything in China.
It's the first to file, not use, right?
Exactly, so. Yeah. It's the opposite as the US. And then there are non-legal strategies also. So first, disclosing as little information as possible. And second, maybe if it's a project of a certain scale, don't put everything in one supplier. Try to break it down in several suppliers so that nobody has the full picture. And then work with maybe a foreign-owned assembly center to put it all together. And yeah. I think we can go straight to number five.
Yeah, each one. This is really a brief overview, honestly, right? Because Bruno has a massive blog about every in detail of all this, and yeah, like each one of these points is a profession. So we're just going to go very high level.
You can say that, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll go with challenge number five, the lack of improvement of factories over time. Okay, so you work with the factory, first order is maybe so-so. Okay, basically you're making maybe better than the average new importer. Good. Second order is still so-so. Third order is still so-so. Some of the mistakes they make are the same over and over again. Okay, if you've been buying in China, this should sound familiar. They just don't. They have sort of a reset button, actually. Every 6 months, they just forget everything that you told them in the past 6 months. So, again, you need to have a lot of documentation, product spec sheets, defect lists, and so on. You need to go there regularly to refresh their minds. You need to do inspections just to give them some feedback during production. And I want to go back to what I said was the most important, is to work with the right type of suppliers. Well, the right type of supplier is also the kind of supplier that thinks long term. You know, for example, you can see that they reinvest their profits in the equipment. They don't have old and rusty equipment, but shiny toilets and a shiny showroom and, you know, a Porsche Cayenne for the bus. This is not a good sign. These guys are thinking short term. They don't care about the future. And there's a lot of them. There's a ton of them in China.
Yeah, they're trying to get rich quick. I mean,
they
see everybody else getting rich around them. I think they have this pressure of...
Yes, exactly. They want to invest in real estate right now.
Yeah.
They don't care about the factory. Or maybe they already bought, you know, 3 villas in Los Angeles. Well, these guys are planning their exit, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of little signs like this that show you that they try to improve in the long term or not. So that's really, really important. After that, if you make custom products, you should help them actually during product development, help them with engineering and make it easy for them if it's a little bit difficult for them. Then, of course, when it gets into production, make sure quality is right, give them some feedback. If you cannot be there, there are, you know, quality assurance companies that can help my company and a lot of others. And actually, the idea is to give them feedback until they get there. You know, if there's some improvements to make in their QC systems or in production, there's also something that can be done. But unless they can produce at the right quality standard, you can't give them any repeat orders. These guys will just sink your business, right? But after that, when you get through that, you actually should still invest in a relationship. Still try to show them ways of doing things better, you know. And again, there's a lot of consultants for this, or you can do it yourself. And
I think we can have a little bit of conversation. I learned some points. I've done this too, but you know, I've done these for my own business. And I think the rising prices is something you just have to accept, I think, in your business. I think the world is flat is something that, you know, there's terms thrown out everywhere, and you know, cheap China is over. I think that's been happening for many years, right?
Cheap. Well, obviously, two things. First, you need to plan for cost increases. You will just not get around it in the long term. I forecast that cost increases in China will keep going at least as fast as they've been going in the last 5 years. So you need to plan for it. Yeah. Even if you go with a cheaper supplier and so on, you can have some short-term fixes, but in the long term, it will go up.
Yeah.
Second, cheap China is over to a certain extent. There's a lot of product categories where China is still by far the cheapest place to source, you know, a lot of products. Just an example, plastic injection molding. The molds here are very cheap. I'm not saying they're as good as those in Europe and the US and with lots of cavities, perfect for high automation kind of production. No, they're more simple. But if you want to have simple, cheap plastic pieces made here, well, you just can't beat China. China is still by far the cheapest place. So, and this is just an example. There's a lot of others. So you need to be smart about what you buy from China versus what you might want to source from another manufacturer in your own country or from Mexico or from Eastern Europe or wherever.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure. And then the other ones I think are a lot about the supplier, but I think point one is more economic.
And
I think the quality, the shipment delays, mm-hmm. the IP, and the lack of improvement are mm-hmm. supplier related. I think
yes.
Point one is more broad, but you still got to be. It's really annoying. Really, the price will always go up. It's just really frustrating. And then, like you said, they're always so. That's kind of related to the supplier, but. So I think you just got to look at the price of that, like, commodity to labor, because you should take ownership of your product or your business, right? So you can't just look at their price and believe whatever they say. You really should understand the breakdown of your product, the components inside of it, the materials used, the labor costs, and also have as much of the CAD. You know, a lot of times I've seen a lot of small buyers just trust the supplier so much and give – but a lot of times the supplier owns it. Technically, they should own the IP because they sometimes have a little bit of an in-house designer.
If there's no contract, then you can assume the supplier owns it. Sure. That's for sure.
But sometimes they do a decent amount of work. Like I've mm-hmm. had some of these factories designed for me, like on a picture. So in a way, I sometimes side with the supplier sometimes because they did invest time in the product too.
Well, then the question is, did they get, because they factored that cost in their price. So did you buy X thousands of pieces as they were expected? In that case, they get reimbursed, no problem. But, you know, they also kind of did a bet, you know, on you.
True.
It worked, and it's normal that they make money.
True.
It's just very, very important for new buyers that they understand the implications of this. If the supplier does the development, in their mind, they own the intellectual property rights, right? And I've seen some people who had a contract with the supplier, and supplier did the job. And then at the end, the buyer said, well, you know, as per the contract, send us the files, the design files in the native format. And the supplier said, well, actually, no, our boss doesn't want to do it. Why? Well, you know, I don't know. My boss just says, no, this is not the way we do. And what's the real reason? Well, they thought we did all that job, all that work. Now they're hooked. They're not going to go with another supplier. We did a good job. They see that we did a good job. They're going to give us the manufacturing job anyway, and they're going to stick with us anyway. And this way, we really make sure they're hooked, you know. Mm-hmm. And some buyers really get pissed off by this and started the work, you know, from scratch again, but they lost 6 months or 3 months.
True, true. And I think another point, I mean, IP is, all these are long shows, but one point is sometimes what's happened to me is they say exclusivity, or you own the IP in the U.S., but I get the other countries. Or maybe I get... Or you don't even speak about it. They assume that. So it's just... That's the point of a contract. You should have this all clear. But think about also which country, which region, which territory, or China too, right? Sometimes they don't think you even care about the Chinese market, so...
Yeah, you need to clarify. And actually, there's... It might be a good good arrangement, you know? If really your market is only the U.S., then say, okay... Exclusivity for the U.S., you can sell to Europe, Australia, and so on.
Yeah. And then the price should be reflected in that too, maybe, or some other way you can work it out. But thanks so much for coming on the show, Renaud. How can people follow up with you? Your blog is great. And any other ways? Or?
Well, the easiest thing for them is to go to qualityinspection.org. Very simple, qualityinspection.org. And from there, it's really the starting point if they want to read more.
Okay, great, great. All right, and that's a wrap. Thanks. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for coming on the show and sharing our note. It's extremely valuable information that I wish I had been aware of when I first started sourcing from China. Also, don't forget, you can get the slides from his presentation on globalfromasia.com/67. And you should also check out his blog at qualityinspection.org, as he's always putting valuable information on there. Okay, and going forward, I have tons of shows already pre-recorded and lined up for 2015. I'm still kind of just deciding which ones to prioritize in the next few weeks. I kind of have some that are in Hong Kong accounting and business structures, along with interviews in China business and entrepreneurs. So I think it's a good mix. And I know some of the listeners tell me they skip over either the China side or the Hong Kong accounting side, but I do seem to get about equal interest on both. So I always appreciate feedback. Also, I got a pretty cool email from a listener in Mexico, Colin, who's in Hong Kong for a week doing some toy inspections and business meetings, and he invited me for a beer in TST District. So I've taken him up on the offer, and I'm going to be doing that. I do want to meet more of you listeners and make more friends and relationships. I think we should kind of try to coordinate a meetup. I think the trade shows are always a good time. A lot of people are visiting in the spring. So stay tuned. We'll look at the schedules. And if you want to shoot me a note, let me know what's good for you. Take care.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.